Chapter 27. In the Tower of the Crimson King. Vulcan. The 18th Primarch had no wish to linger in the alien necropolis, and not merely because he knew time was against him. The city, Kalastar, bore the heavy stink of tragedy, a failure so profound that Vulcan felt it infecting him. He was a creature of the fundament over the firmament, a man of ultimate practicality. Here, where physics was a code of laws all too easily broken, he was beginning to choke on the dead city's aura. He breathed in its spiritual failure and felt it in his bloodstream. It was an awkwardly metaphysical feeling. The only bounty within Kalastar was the abundance of imperial dead. Corpses populated the city's thoroughfares and gathering plazas, lying in their hundreds, sometimes in their thousands. Skitari, Secutari, Martian Myrmidon war priests, Sisters of Silence, Custodians. Most were years dead, reduced by the nature of this place to skinless bones contained within corroded armour. Some, though, seemed only recently expired, either killed in the last few months or preserved in a state of cadaverous freshness by the whims of the Webway. All of them were demon slain. All showed horrendous wounds from inhuman blades, evidence of mutagenic disease or partial devouring. Along a particularly wide avenue, Vulcan walked a winding path around wrecked grav rhinos and land raiders, picking his way through mounds of golden dead. Once, the Emperor's custodian guard had numbered 10,000 souls, the greatest achievement of genetic engineering, except the Primarchs themselves. Most had died here, selling their lives in a failed attempt to undo Magnus's folly and fight for the Emperor's dream. The Imperial forces garrisoned in this necropolis years before had called it the Impossible City, a city of xeno-cultured materials eclipsing almost any human metropolis. It was set within a tunnel of unmeasurable size, with its towers and arches and bridges and avenues built at every imaginable angle. To look east or west was to see the cartography of distant districts founded on the great tunnel's walls, the sensation disorientatingly like looking down at a map. To look up was to see a mirror city of stalactite spires growing down from the ceiling, this other ground somehow kilometres above your head. Whichever name was ascribed to this place of shattered psychoplastics, it was a monument to two failed empires. First, the Eldari population had died here, annihilated by some long-forgotten cataclysm, maybe even destroyed in the maelstrom of godbirth that had ended the rise of their decadent culture. Vulcan caught sight of their ghosts, or perhaps the ghosts of their ghosts, at the edges of his sight. Slivers of soul light flickered in the windows of towers and in the arches of streets, lacking even the substance of shadows. They were visual echoes, unsentient, just the city in its long death recalling fragments of its lost life. Then the Imperium had laid claim to the husk of Kalastar. With the Emperor's vision and the Mechanicum's ingenuity, they bound this region of the ancient webway to the Imperium's newborn, throneborn pathways. And that too had failed. But the cataclysm that laid waste to mankind's claim was anything but forgotten. Magnus the Red had torn through here on his quest to warn the Emperor of Horus's treachery. His astral form, swollen with righteousness and fueled by human sacrifice, had ruptured the Webway's fragile protective sheaths. As he ripped his way through this realm, destroying more of it with every step, every breath, every sorcerous whisper and desperate whim, he undid the Mechanicum's great work towards the salvation of humanity and opened the way for demonkind to flood into this sacred place. With a heart bursting with the best intentions, he had doomed his species. And so began the war in the Webway. A war fought for years in absolute secrecy, out of sight of the teeming trillions it was supposed to save. The Emperor's custodians and Silent Sisterhood were pressed back and back and back until they abandoned first the Impossible City, then the Webway itself. And with that second surrender, they abandoned the Emperor's dream. Humanity's future, without reliance on the poisons of divine worship and warp travel, was lost. Vulcan had learned much from his time in the Imperial dungeon. Drips, dregs, shreds of all this, pieced together from Malkador's lecturing, from the murmurs of custodians, from the chanted lamentations of Mechanicus adepts. And Vulcan wondered, had his brother faced up to all he had done? He and Magnus had never been close. He couldn't predict what his Prosperine brother might be thinking now, exalted and enslaved by his patron overlord, more powerful than ever, yet capering at the whims of that distant, cackling god. Before reaching the city, Vulcan found himself musing whether Kalastar would still be flooded with the twisted figures of demonkind. Perhaps a million of the Neverborn would be waiting, hunting in the shade cast by spires of wraithbone and even rarer psychoplastics. But this was not so. There was nothing for them here, nothing for them to feed upon, nothing for them to digest in the process of maintaining incarnation. It seemed that demons did not like to dance on the graves of their foes. They moved on, driven by hunger, for to remain still was to starve. And so Vulcan was alone, alone and lost in a screamingly empty place. There was no breeze in this sunless realm, though there was a sourceless, directionless light that granted a misty illumination. There was also, though he kept thinking he was imagining it, something palpable in the otherwise still air, a feeling of energy at play, an invisible current flowing out of sight and almost out of mind. He did not know if this was a natural element produced by the webway itself, or evidence of the unseen war of energies between Magnus and their father. Time was likewise worthless as a reference. Every time Vulcan checked his armor's chron, it told him a different tale. That he'd been walking for 3 days. That he'd been travelling for a month. That his journey wasn't set to begin for another 6 years. None of this mattered, really. Nowhere did he see any signs of his brother Magnus. All he could do was walk. And that's what he did, trusting to the rebellious laws of this dimension. Time either passed, or it didn't. He had no way to be sure. As he journeyed on, he thought of the custodians and Sisters of Silence that had given their lives for him to enter the webway. He feared he was failing them. More than once, he felt the passage of some vast etheric presence nearby. In each instance, he felt like a deep ocean swimmer, being fortunately ignored by immense underwater beasts drifting past. A sensation like and unlike a breeze would caress his sweating skin, and in its wake was a scent not wholly unlike burning stone. Curiously, he knew he wasn't smelling the truth of the scent itself, but the closest his senses could come to codifying something utterly alien to the human experience. He came to the belief that what he felt was the passage of Eldari void ships sailing through tunnels in adjacent realities. City-sized cruisers brushing past him, almost close enough to touch. This assumption, based on little more than gut instinct, was entirely correct. When he at last came upon a sign of life in this lifeless expanse, surprise stole all of his momentum for half a dozen heartbeats. Vulcan stood in place, head lifted, staring up at the Wraithbone Tower. It was at once a spire no different from any of the other 1,000 Vulcan had seen in Kalastar so far, while also being the apotheosis of them. He could almost sense, with a heretofore unknown instinct that felt somehow animal, that he was at the very heart of the Dead City. He stood at a convergence of the right planes of alignment and existence, where all was in perfect balance. The entrance to the tower was an arch at the end of a long bridge, and the bridge was a crumbling curve of deteriorating psychoplastic, its sides eroded by tendrils of golden mist rising from the chasm it spanned. There were no bodies marking the site of an old battle, No demons lurking in the misty dark. Only a single trail of dusty footprints. Some human in scale, others demonically cloven, leading across the bridge and into the tower's yawning arch. It was the trail of a creature, shifting between the states of man and monster, lost in protean flux. Vulcan rested his hammer on his shoulder and followed the trail. Later, Vulcan would struggle to remember the truth of his journey ascending the spire. After the siege, and for Vulcan, there would indeed be a later, though that was destined to be a time of flayed nerves and an agony so raw it drove reason from his skinless skull, he would never be able to piece together exactly what occurred once he crossed the Wraithbone Bridge. Faint memories lingered, each one sitting jaggedly against the others, not of a single journey, but of three. He would recall his boots crunching on mist-kissed Wraithbone stairs. Equally, he would remember striding up a stairway of gold-veined Tiscan marble. Impossibly, he would remember his boots thudding down on steps of mutated flesh and bone. The tower, which was either all of these immersions or none of them, seemed to take forever to ascend. He remembered that much with absolute clarity, and the duration was not a matter of distance. When he reflected on the insides of that spire, during the long and lonely later he was fated to face alone, he would become increasingly sure that the tower was making itself as he climbed it. Its internal structures weren't set in stone or wraithbone, but were woven into being in response to his ascension. He was a grounding element, a source of metaphysical stability. Reality was forced to fall out of infinite flux to converge on a mere handful of possibilities. Up the spiral staircases he walked. In the Tower of Ancient Bone, he passed the psychoplastic corpses of Eldari constructs, lying like puppets with cut strings, and he listened to the whispers of the ghosts of ghosts. On the stairs of Prosperine Marble, he breathed in the smell of smoke, while the windows granted him a view of the crystalline city of Tisca, its white pyramids burning in the light of the setting sun. In the Tower of Flesh and Bone and Warping Stone, he met warriors of a legion he couldn't name. These warriors, clad in filthy cobalt and overwrought gold, stood silent sentinel on the stairs, never once greeting him or returning his hails. They watched him with dead eye lenses that held only a simulacrum of life. Their heads turned with slow automaton intensity to regard him as he passed. They stank of funeral ash. High above, he heard his brother screaming, except it was also the sound of chanting and a murmuring, desperately close to prayer. When Vulcan threw open the final rune-warded door, when he passed beneath the last glyph-marked marble arch, when he pushed through the final shimmering portal of dancing mirages, he stood under the dome of a grand observatory. And there, stunned at the sight of him, and enraged at his arrival, and grinning in expectation, was his brother Magnus. Magnus the Red was a luminous lie, incarnated as a being of burning light. A thousand chains of force thrashed and coiled from the aura, each one a conduit for cascading energy. Vulcan had to guard his eyes against the worst of the light, though there was nothing he could do about the crashing thunder of the chamber's unstable energies. He could make out Magnus's face, just barely, as a melting and reforming mask within the avatar of deceitful light. The chamber around them was pristine in its long death, the Wraithbone untouched by the forces at play, and Vulcan followed the lines of etheric force as they stretched out from the observatory across the skyline of this alien necropolis. They faded in the air, not with distance, but outside the range of their own visual metaphor. Vulcan was no arcanist, no scholar of the mystical, but he knew what he was seeing. This was a manifestation of his brother's assault on the Emperor. He walked forward, ignoring the writhing serpents of force light, his knuckles tightening on the haft of his hammer. The air resisted him, turning thick, invisible force that would have crushed a mortal and paralyzed an Astartes, slowed Vulcan's stalking advance to a teeth-clenching crawl, like a man leaning into a storm's wind. The room danced and shimmered about the two of them, becoming the marble chamber once more, becoming the oubliette of flesh and stone, becoming the Wraithbone Observatory. Magnus's shifting features were strained, a mangled stream of invocation pouring from his mouth. He cursed, and he chanted, and he seethed, and Vulcan could discern no difference between what was spite and what might have been a spell. The chamber in which they stood turned on some unseen metaphysical axis. It didn't move, didn't rotate or spin, for these words imply a motion that was never present. Nevertheless, it turned. What is and what will be disintegrated, becoming what was. Vulcan looked upon an incarnation of his brother that had not existed for years. Magnus the Red lifted his face, and Vulcan's heart broke at the devastation he saw there. The profundity of grief, and, unexpectedly, the depth of guilt. The burning city beyond the wide windows was an amber reflection in his remaining eye. Tizca would be dead by dawn.
This is the night that the Space Wolves brought ruin to the City of Light.
The Primarch of Prospero looked ravaged, the lines on his face etched deep enough to age him far past any of his brothers. And yet, was this not Tizca? This was years before the beginning of the siege.
Or the illusion of years before.
The observatory stood open to the heavens at dusk, as the first glimpses of unfamiliar constellations heralded the coming night. Any other evening, he might have been tempted to watch the stellar ballet above his brother's homeworld. Tonight, he advanced with his hammer in his hands, still forcing his way forward through chains of invisible force.
"Stay back!"
Magnus warned, and with those words, the world turned again. What is and what was both unravelled, becoming what will be. The observatory was a spire-top platform, open to the tainted night, while the sky above blazed with witchlight. This world was in the grip of the warp, doubtless some ancient Eldari world in the Ocularis Terribus warp storm, turned sour by the Empyrean's tides. The most unnerving detail was the planetary ring decorating the heavens, formed not of rocks and particles, but of souls. They wailed, and at this distance, Vulcan should never have heard their wailing song. Yet he did, and his skin crawled with it. To think this tragedy was Magnus's destiny, ruling this tainted globe some timeless span in the future. The very idea was a splinter in Vulcan's heart. To see his brother existing in a place of such suffering, a realm where the only antidote to its grotesquerie was to imagine yourself as its king. But Magnus the Red turned slowly. Then Vulcan's heart cooled to stone at the sight of what the warp had done. Here was Magnus as the dragon had seen the sorcerer king, a giant of burnished red flesh and lustrous wings. The face was a mask of condescending horror, smug with amassed knowledge. Cycloptic, fanged, bestial, all nobility was gone from the visage, leaving animalistic superiority in its place. Vulcan pushed closer to the towering figure, with its feathered wings bathed in poisoned starlight and lashing in the arcane wind.
"Stay back!"
Magnus snarled again. And again the world began to turn.
"Enough!"
Vulcan growled.
"Enough!"
He swung the hammer with every iota of strength he possessed. He held nothing back. It was an execution, the sentence of death delivered. Millennia from now, an increasingly ignorant Imperium would tell tales of the Emperor's sons. These Primarchs, they would say, were capable of flight, capable of enduring any torment, capable of splitting mountains with blows of their great weapons. Whatever was true, and whatever would turn out false, Vulcan swung the hammer that day with enough force to tear through the fuselage of a Stormbird gunship. The blow he levelled at his brother's heart would have shattered the shin of a warlord titan. Magnus caught the hammer one-handed. The monster gazed down into Vulcan's dark, straining features, and the flesh around the monster's one great eye wrinkled as he grinned.
Vulcan,
purred the demon prince.
I told you to stay back.